Welcome back to the Renaissance Space podcast, a place for teachers, leaders, and anyone interested in education to hear a range of different voices discussing all manner of different topics associated with teaching and learning. My name is Margaret Allen, and I am your host. And this time, it gives me great pleasure to be talking to Jean Kearns, a colleague of mine from over the pond. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you, Margaret. So glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Please? Yes, sure. 16 years at Renaissance after wow. More than 20 years teaching. So I'm a third generation educator. So the comment in our family is it's in our blood. It's like we can't escape. And I taught for a long, long time. And I didn't aspire to come work for a technology company, but we had done so many things with Renaissance and seen so much growth on the part of our kids that when they approached me a number of years ago and said, would you like to maybe consider coming to work for us? I had to at least consider it. And it's been a grand adventure, including crossing the pond to work with fabulous people like you.
Well, what a lovely introduction. Thank you. And some people listening may not know that actually Renaissance started in the US. So over 35 years ago, Judy Paul, 4 children, boy wasn't reading, and she started writing quizzes. And the rest, as they say, is history. Yes. So Accelerated Reader is arguably the flagship product. But of course, STAR is completely intrinsic to that. Could you give me your view on STAR, Jean? Because I know lots of people have views and opinions and experiences, and it would be lovely to hear your perspective on it.
Sure. And, you know, having been here the number of years I have, when I started, Accelerate Reader really was the core of our operation. And now STAR is probably the most widely used computer adaptive test in the world. STAR was originally a placement test for Accelerated Reader. And then more than a decade ago, we decided to really expand what the test did and what it was capable of doing and the item types in there and things like that to really make it a comprehensive interim assessment to meet a variety of purposes for school. And people really responded. And I think, you know, part of the secret sauce or the magic formula or whatever you want is our goal is to make it as efficient as possible, to eat up as little time as possible, because, you know, there's nothing about just assessing a kid that really makes a difference. It's only when the assessment is fast enough, efficient enough, and gives you enough information that you can then use to do something, you know, that's when things start getting better for kids. So we're doing everything we can to keep it as absolutely as efficient as possible.
So people who will have been listening keenly to what you said, you mentioned a word, item. So I'm just going to pick up on that, if I may. But I'd like to couple it with some of the comments we hear is, but it's just multiple choice, isn't it?
Yeah,
and that's two things.
Yeah, I mean, very much purposefully from design. So, I mean, the first thing is, I think sometimes multiple choice questions get a bad reputation. And honestly, as teachers, we don't get a lot of training to write them. So I got to admit, some of the multiple choice questions I wrote for my teacher-made quizzes and tests might not have been the very, very best. But anyone that's taken a really well-done professional, I mean, there are professional exams for teachers that are quite challenging that are all multiple choice. So, you know, the developmental process that we go through in writing those items is exhaustive. So, you know, you can easily on Norman Webb's depth of knowledge, you can easily get to depth of knowledge 2, sometimes depth of knowledge 3, in terms of assessing certain standards, you can get to 3. But here's the whole thing I think that everybody misses, Margaret, is, you know, you got to decouple in your mind assessment from instruction. And we're trying to make that assessment piece really efficient. But then we give you an instructional planning report that says, here's the skills that are within range of a kid. That's when you really start wanting to explore. That's when you want to do the open-ended items and have all the responses and all those types of things. So, you know, it's not that STAR is the totality by any means of all that you do for assessing. Our goal is to say, here are the things they definitively know. You don't need to look at these things. Here are the things that we know that they are not ready for, because they've struggled with the prerequisites. And more importantly, here's the range that you want to explore close to what you're doing instructionally in the classroom each day.
And that's a really good point. I think a lot of us say, you know, teaching of reading is complex, and we have never said that AR and STAR are the tools to do that. We are offering additional value to that experience for the children to give insight for both teacher and child, actually, in terms of their reading journey.
Yeah, teaching is so complex. And, you know, the reality of it is we need a wide variety of tools to get that complex job done. And I kind of think of those little Swiss Army knives, you know, it's got a little screwdriver and a little kind of, you know, no one uses those. I mean, they don't really use them, because if you've got a real set of screwdrivers, that's better. So, you know, teachers have a toolbox full of all kinds of things, or they should have a toolbox full of all kinds of things. And one of the tools in there can be Accelerated Reader for what it does. Another tool can be STAR for what it does. And there's other tools that you need as well. Because again, I think you nailed it when you said, it's so complex. One tool isn't going to do everything. But that's like saying, well, you know, I don't like pliers because they don't screw screws in really well. No, you use a screwdriver for that. So, you know, part of assessment literacy and just, you know, developing your skill as a teacher is learning about the different tools and which one to pick up for which purpose.
Brilliant. And I love that analogy of the pen knife. It just captures it so well, so well. So we've benchmarked the children's, let's use that word, and they then are offered a range of books. Accelerated Reader steps into the spotlight. Is it just read a book and take a quiz? So there's my question. That's what I'm throwing out there.
I think the question, it depends on what do schools do with it. You know, the very, very best tool placed in hands that are ill-prepared for it or in a culture that's not suited for it is not going to be ideally used. And you can get the very same tool to another place, and it's transformative. So, you know, at the heart of it, we want kids reading as much as possible. Research is also extremely clear about this, that programs like DEAR, Drop Everything and Read, Silent Sustained Reading, the results with those are kind of mixed. And I think the results are mixed because if kids are just reading, you're not getting a flow of information back to understand, first of all, did they actually read? Because, you know, sometimes they'll try to fake us out. Or if they did they struggle and are changes necessary? That's why both the sort of guidance before reading occurs with the book levels and reading range and knowing where students, you know, how, you know, their general readability, coupled with the flow of information on the back end. Okay, a student read this book and they took this quiz. Here's some information. And that's all we want it to be. And I remember talking with Judy about this. You referenced her, Judy Paul, the creator of Accelerated Reader. She said everything about AR, she's like, it wasn't to be, you know, points or a game or a competition. She's like, I just wanted it to be information. I wanted to tell both a teacher and a student at the end of the process, here's how you did in your reading. And what does that mean for the next book you pick up or the next thing you do instructionally?
Amazing. I'm very jealous that you've been able to have those conversations with Judy. I mean, that in itself, to speak to the founder, to the initiator, is amazing. So during lockdown, which happened all over the world, so, yeah, you know, that's a common theme.
Yeah, everybody got that one.
They did. We decided to offer focus skills out into the market by way of an offering, really, to support teachers in their assessing of children as a freebie. They could download it. And would you be able to just expand a little bit on this? Because they're quite meaty tomes, aren't they?
Yeah. To your point, first of all, what are they? Well, they're the most essential skills for progress in reading and maths. How were they identified during a process that we do that's fairly unique to Renaissance, which is the unpacking of the standards in the national curricula in the case of England, and determining what are all the discrete teachable skills that are in there. Now, the interesting thing, I think, worldwide is when you look at the standard sets that we've all been offered, they're all very, very long. They have a lot of things in there. And generally speaking, when you unpack them, there's more to cover than anybody ever really could. So what the content experts that we worked with did, and in the case of the learning progression there, it was tremendously just amazing work done by NFER, identified those skills that are just absolutely necessary. So in other words, if you master all the focus skills of year 3, you are ready for everything coming at you at year 4. And if you master all the focus skills of year four, you get it. It goes on from there. Now, prior, and that's so important, I think you noted that, prior to the lockdown in the pandemic, it was only Renaissance customers that could see or interact with focus skills in any way. And we made a decision as everything started, you know, shutting down and everybody became concerned about progress of kids. We made a decision to give away the focus skills. And so you can go to the website and you can take a look at the skills across all the years and you can print them out in a workbook. And it goes back to our mission, which, you know, succinctly stated is to accelerate the learning of all. And we decided that, you know, in that moment that was unique, that we were all facing worldwide, we would either, talk the talk or walk the walk. And so we said, you know, this makes sense. Everybody needs this. Everybody's going to have to prioritize. Understanding the most essential skills will be critical to making the most efficient recovery possible. And so we chose to give that away. And it literally worldwide represented millions of dollars of intellectual property that we just gave out there. But I'm glad we did. And I'm humbled by the educators that I've spoken to. One lady literally came up to me at a conference and said, "Focus skills changed my life." And she said, I was so overwhelmed. I didn't know where to start. And just by narrowing it down and helping me understand what the most essential skills are, it gave me direction.
And those focus skills, those critical skills, are the ones that determine a child's progress and attainment and gives insight. And teachers like to talk about children. They don't like to talk about data. And increasingly, I think we need to remember that, you know, it's probably someone else who's going to scrutinize the data. But to have an insight on that one child, what on earth's going on here? And the reading dashboard does that very well, doesn't it, in terms of looking at children.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the challenge, everybody, I mean, and if it existed, we'd have it. Everybody wants just like one number they can look at. Like if I could just look at one number. Well, as you said, teaching is complex. Kids are complex. You know, we're talking about both attainment and progress. Well, by the very nature of two terms being there, there's probably going to have to be two scores. So I think that's really what the reading dashboard tries to present is, here's a way of understanding where this child is in terms of their level of attainment. And just as important to you, here are some ways to understand how this child is progressing. And, you know, the entire picture of what's going on with this student must include both of those elements. So, you know, that's the challenge. It's not just one score and one number. I love, one of my mentors was a gentleman named Rick Stiggins, who was an assessment expert. And he said, you know, the way that we train teachers is kind of like training someone to practice medicine without teaching them what tests to order and how to interpret the results, because we just don't get a lot of assessment training in our pre-service teaching. But, you know, part of that is learning about the different scores, what they mean, what they can tell you, how far they can go. But it's about getting that total picture of, you know, in terms of progress, where are they or how are they growing? And in terms of attainment, where are they? And looking at both of those two elements together kind of helps you understand the entire landscape of what's happening with an individual kid.
And the reason I wanted you to articulate that, thank you for doing so, is that I think sometimes the reading dashboard can feel like a scary place. Mm-hmm. But I'd love people to persevere with it because there's so much in there. And get in contact if you want some help. Yeah. And don't quite get it. Let us know because we want you to be able to use it.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, it's not that we can answer every question, but we get questions all day long about, you know, things embedded in our products. I can guarantee that the one question we can't answer is the one that you don't pose. So, you know, we have people on the line all the time. You can call us, you can chat us, whatever way is best to get to you. I always tell people, do not get frustrated. Do not wait. We have a whole team of people standing by to answer those questions. So call us, you know, chat with us, get in there. We've got people that can help. That's part of our service to you.
So the other area is reading ranges, reading ages, and R scale score. So, you know, again, as you said earlier, there are several elements that can sometimes paint the picture, but sometimes they can also be conflicting because people have, you know, well, my child's nine. Mm-hmm. You know, well, what does that actually mean? Is that English as a second language? Is it somebody who loves reading or somebody who hates reading? So there's a lot in there as well, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we can go in two different directions with that. I mean, you said reading ranges. Are we talking about what books are we going to get kids to do? Or are we talking about the scores?
Yes.
So I'll ask you, which way do you want to go first?
Well, let's talk about the range that we offer children by way of a suitable range. Let's use that phrase.
Yeah. And I think what everybody, and again, there's just something about us as educators, and I was guilty of this as well. We just want like a number, like just give me a number, let me plug it into a formula, and then it will tell me exactly what to do. Well, then along come kids and they introduce a whole lot of variables to the situation. So if, you know, you take a look at it on the surface, you know, we say, oh, if a student has, you know, this particular, you know, score in STAR reading, here's the reading range suggested. But that's what it says. It's a suggested range. It's a starting point. So, you know, going back to the founders, Judy and Terry, let me quote a paper that Terry wrote. He said, matching kids to books is part science and part art. Reading ranges are merely a tool. When you have no other information, they give you a place to start. They are a guideline and they are a suggestion. However, once a student actually starts reading, that's the best kind of information you have. So, you know, if I know nothing about a student shows up at my school for the first day, I give them STAR reading. Maybe not on the first day, let them get acclimated, but you know what I mean? Soon I give them STAR reading. I find a reading range. That's what I know about that kid. I can guide them to some books. But after they actually start reading and I start seeing those comprehension rates come back, that's even better information for me. So again, we all want this formula. We all want a lookup table, but kids introduce so many variables. And the other one that is, and again, it's always suggestions. And it says, you know, teachers and librarians with their knowledge of kids, you know, research has been very conclusive lately that background knowledge profoundly impacts what we can read. So, you know, if a kid comes in and they're really interested in a particular topic, they can probably read more advanced books on that topic because they've already read about that. And, you know, it could be that your most struggling student could read the most complex book on a certain topic, while your most capable reader in the same school might not be able to deal with that book because they don't have the background knowledge. So, you know, reading suggestion, starting point, but read the fine print, read the words that we put around it. Is it's part art, it's part science. We can tell you the science. The art piece is up to you. And don't restrict kids. I mean, I always tell teachers, anything that you do that causes a kid to start shutting down reading, then stop doing what you're doing. You know, just, you know when to push, know when not to push. And, you know, for certain kids, they're more willing to be pushed or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also their backgrounds and their cultural, and all of that plays into that so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to your point, people really want to just have something quick and snappy that they can, right, moving on, next.
Yeah. And those things just don't exist.
No,
I mean, and that's the challenge. Again, we all want a lookup table, and that's just not what the world is. So it's that art and science combination that must come together.
Thank you. And we're sort of coming towards the end of our chat. It's been so informative. I'm going to listen to this so many times and out things. We obviously have MyOn as a digital platform, so much more than just digital books. Sound like a salesperson now, but I really believe that. And, you know, there's so many things you can do with it because it is so amazing. Let's just touch on this sort of, you know, digital v. paper. I know where I sit with it. You know, there's space for both. What's your view? What would you say to people who are sort of naysayers about digital or naysayers about the fact that children are still reading books in their hand?
Well, the first thing I would say is the decision is out of our hands. Digital's out there. In fact, there was actually a very interesting sort of little bit of controversy here in the States over the last couple of days. because the National Council of Teachers of English called for really more digital reading. I mean, they kind of basically said, this is the way kids are going to take in a lot of information in the future. So, you know, we need to make sure that we do both. So, you know, one of my colleagues, Jan Bryan, wrote a section in my book, Literacy Reframed, and in one of her headings was digital is decided. It's done. It's here. So as teachers, you know, digital reading is part of it. We got to prepare kids for it. The other thing she said was it's different. I mean, there's some different aspects about it. The research is, and maybe a great follow-up, but getting Jan on to talk deeply about digital, because she's done the research review more than I have. But I know that when it comes to just reading for pleasure, you know, which with most kids are, you know, doing through Accelerated Reader, it doesn't matter all that much whether it's in a paper form or digital form. The advantage that digital has is just how easy it is. Yeah. You know, just in a couple of clicks, you get to a book. And I like what Daniel Willingham, cognitive scientist, he told a story one time. He said he went into a classroom and the teacher read the first chapter of a book to get kids excited. And he said it was amazing. The kids were all excited. They all wanted to read the book. And, you know, I've encouraged teachers to do this, read the first chapter and then put it down. And the teacher said that now there's 4 copies in the library. And how many of you want to read this book? Every kid in the books, you know, in their classrooms raised their hands. Teacher felt really proud of what he had done. Well, you know, 2 days later, he decided to pass by the library and just make sure, you know, that he'd been effective. And he walked in and he was completely shocked to find that all 4 copies of the book remained on the shelf. And what Dr. Willingham said is, that's proof to us we're lazy. Human beings are lazy. He's like, if I could have just pressed a button, you know, a couple of clicks and bam, I have the book, I would have been off and reading. But for a student that had to find a time period during the day to get out of the classroom, to get permission from the teacher to go to the library, having tried to remember the title of the book, to then perhaps interface with the librarian or the, you know, the circulation system or whatever to get, that was just way too many barriers. And so what Willingham says is the best aspect, the absolute best aspect of digital reading platforms is that immediacy, that in the moment, when a kid is interested in something, click, click, I have the book and I can start reading. He said that creates a dynamic where texts are just falling into kids' laps. And I got a note from a school the other day. It was their stats for last year. They were preparing to report to their school board. They'd seen like a 300% increase in reading as they implemented Mion. And they'd had, you know, Accelerated Reader and things for a while and had a lot of reading, but their reading really went through the roof. And I think it just goes back to that easy access. Let's not underestimate the power of that.
Absolutely. And also, I think it's worth mentioning the nonfiction fiction conversation, because to your point about the recent article about children needing to be digitally sound, they also, most of their reading and writing once they leave school or full-time education will be nonfiction.
Yeah.
So, and some children won't naturally go to nonfiction. So, you know, Mion has a 70-30 split in favor of nonfiction. So that in itself is a plus.
Yeah. And I think as teachers, we have to say to ourselves, well, what did you put in your classroom library? You know, many of us are in teaching as we loved reading and we loved literature. And sometimes we fill our rooms with literature. And sometimes there's not as much information. There actually are some studies that indicate young children actually gravitate to informational text. They want to know about things. They want to know how the world works. And I think Mion does just that. It provides this massive collection of both fiction and nonfiction, but probably a richer strain of nonfiction than most kids have been able to access before. And again, to your point, most of the reading that most of our students are going to do in their life is I'm going to have to read something informational to get, you know, ideas and key points from it and then use them and do something with them. So we've got to make sure that we are preparing our students for the totality of the wide variety of reading tasks that will be presented to them as they make their way through life.
Well, I couldn't have asked you to sum up what we've been talking about in a better way. Just amazing. We need to prepare children, and what better than making sure we give them the right tools and the right exposure. Is there anything you'd like to say that you haven't had chance to say, that I've not asked you, that you thought you were, I was going to ask you?
No, I would just say it's an exciting time right now. I mean, I think, you know, I'm so excited for back to school this fall. We have a lot of great things going on at Renaissance, and you know, we've had a couple of odd back to schools. I mean, our last normal back to school was the fall of 2019. You know, I think this one's the first new normal back to school, and I'm so excited. You know, it's like the new normal. Are we there yet? Yeah, I think we are. So, you know, it's kind of exciting time right now. I think we're all kind of breathing out. We still have work to do with our kids. I mean, we really do. The research is clear. Kids have been impacted, but I feel like a little bit of the weight's coming off of people's shoulders, because it's just getting a little bit easier and a little bit more normal. So I'm really excited just to kind of have this back to school season coming in just a little bit, and have it be somewhat normal.
Well, thank you, Gene. And I'm really excited that we, and I particularly, have had the opportunity to share with you and hear from you. Just so many little nuggets of information and knowledge and research-based stuff that's allowed us to do what we do and hopefully have an impact on children's education. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, I certainly have, please take a moment to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget that you can catch up on all previous episodes at www.renlearn.co.uk/podcast. Thank you so much for listening.